Ever heard of Wells, Oregon? It's a little tiny town just north of Corvallis. It's not even a ghost town today. It was replaced in 1942 with the second biggest city in the state, a city that would last less than 5 years. That second biggest city is a ghost town now. It's called Camp Adair. You should check it out sometime. Hi, my name is Finn J.D. John. It's Monday, April 16th, and I'm reading a column from the archives of the weekly newspaper column I write, Offbeat Oregon History. I do this every day. Of course, if you're subscribed to the podcast, you already know that. If you'd like to find out more about this little podcast or about the newspaper column it's part of, stay tuned or check out offbeatoregon.com. Today's column originally ran in the newspapers on April 24th, 2010, under the headline, Camp Adair, Oregon's Second Largest City, Was Built in 6 Muddy Months. Here we go. In 1942, Oregon's second largest city sprang into being. In 6 months, a big patch of mid-Willamette Valley became a massive army training camp, Camp Adair. 6 years after that, Camp Adair was the state's biggest salvage operation. And today, it's the state's biggest coast town. Here's the story, the short version anyway. In about 1940, people in Washington, D.C. pretty much knew war was coming, and they started looking around for a 65,000-acre piece of ground, mostly nice and flat, but with some hilly, woody terrain on it, a place that would seem a little bit like a piece of Germany where they were expecting to be doing the fighting. By 1941, it was down to 2 sites, one near Eugene and one just north of Corvallis. Business leaders in Corvallis and Monmouth, with an eye on the retail trade, actually visited Washington to lobby for the more northerly site. To the dismay of about 750 people living in the area around and in the tiny town of Wells, who were subsequently displaced by the base, they were successful. Many had to leave crops in the ground and weren't compensated for them, although the government did pay for their land. But there were few complaints. By this time, the war was actually going on. A few weeks later, Wells was razed and the area was, as they say today, shovel-ready. Then the crews moved in, 4 big construction companies that during peacetime were fierce regional competitors. During the construction season of 1942, mid-spring to late fall, they built about 1,800 buildings. According to historian John H. Baker, these included, quote, a field house with 3 full-size basketball courts, a bakery which had the capacity to produce 45,000 loaves of bread every day, a wastewater treatment plant, a freshwater treatment plant, a heating plant, 500 barracks, 11 chapels, 5 movie theaters, 13 post exchanges, 2 service clubs, a hospital, a bank, a post office, phone exchange, warehouses, coal yards, headquarters building, a gas house, firing ranges, a model German village, electrical substation and service, airfield, day and orderly rooms, rail yards, and the major improvements of Highway 99W. You get all that? To get this done, 8,000 people worked all summer long. At their peak, they were finishing a building every 32 minutes. Electricians learned to wear stilts to save the time it usually took to move a ladder around. The hospital, Baker said, broke a national record for construction speed. It was all done on time, under budget. By mid-Salem, this instant city was ready to welcome its 40,000-odd inhabitants. This at a time when Salem had just hit 31,000 residents and Eugene was still down around 20,000. Portland at 305,000 was the runaway leader in population at the time. Units trained at Adair for service in the war included the 91st Infantry's Powder River Division, the 70th Infantry Trailblazers Division, the 104th Infantry Timberwolf Division, and the 96th Infantry Deadeye Division. The camp was decommissioned after the war, though bits of it lingered on into the 1960s, including an array of anti-aircraft missiles installed in 1959. Buildings were dismantled in panels and trucked away or floated across the Willamette River to be used to build new homes. Hundreds of these, characterized by sash windows of uniform size and 2-inch-thick exterior walls, still shelter families all over the Mid-Valley, although many have been upgraded to give them better insulation. Today, the northeastern corner of Camp Adair is a wildlife refuge, the E.E. Wilson. It's been restored to the seasonal wetland that it once was, so mosquitoes are not unknown there, although, thanks to the plentiful bug-eating wildlife, not as common as you might expect. The long, straight, broad stretches of abandoned blacktop make for a pleasant bicycling spot. Mosquitoes, by the way, only fly about 6 miles an hour, so you're okay if you go faster than that. And the plentiful ruins and foundation walls make a great place for geocaching. it's an especially rewarding place to visit with a copy of Baker's book to use as a ghost town guide. Nearby, the city of Adair Village, incorporated in the 1970s on a corner of the old site, still has several of the original buildings, including the camp's old fire station, which is now a restaurant. Here's a personal note. I actually live in a house that was built in the early 1950s out of salvaged material from Camp Adair. Before we moved in, I gutted the old house and retrofitted it with stud walls. The construction technique was fascinating. Each panel was built by laying out tongue and groove 1x4 planks on a flat surface, probably a concrete floor, laying out an X-shaped pattern of bracing 1x4s on top of that, and nailing it all together with ribbon nails. Then 3/8-inch sheetrock, Kaiser brand, was attached to that, and voila, wallboard, stud wall, sheathing, and siding, all in one neat little 2-inch thick package. Of course, the insulation value was very low, and the walls looked weird. The walls also carried the load of the roof all by themselves, a system I've heard called structural sheathing. And in our case, the weight of the whole house was transferred to the mud sill on the foundation by nothing more than a row of nails. The floor wasn't a structural part of the house either. In fact, I ripped the whole thing out, including beams and girders, and for a while our home was nothing but a 60-year-old shell nailed to the mud sill of the foundation wall with a dirt floor. Of course, it had a floor when we bought it, and it has a floor now. It wasn't pretty, but it worked. It's a lot nicer now that I've fitted stud walls up behind the shell and insulated it all. That's it for today's column. You've been listening to an Offbeat Oregon History Archive column. If you'd like more, you can read hundreds of columns from the last 4 years on our website, offbeatoregon.com. On the website, you can also subscribe to get these podcasts delivered directly to your smartphone every day via RSS or iTunes, or you can join the conversation on the Facebook page or the Twitter feed. All my stuff is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. See offbeatoregon.com/cc for details. Finally, if you're ever up in Corvallis and have time for a cup of something, look me up. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Have a great day.